Okay, welcome back to the ML SecOps podcast, everybody. I am your ML SecOps community leader, Charlie McCarthy. It's great to have you back. And today we're joined by some leaders from the Hunter community. Hunter is the world's first AIML bug bounty platform. Welcome, everyone. Thanks for being here. We're going to give our listeners a little bit of background about Hunter, what it is, who it's for, who can join, and just do a little bit of an introduction. So with me today, we have Madison Vorbrick, Dan McInerney, and Marcello Salati. Dan has been on the show many times before as a host, but now we've got him in the hot seat.
I've been demoted.
Yeah, no. He's just back in the hot seat answering questions instead of asking them. So we know who y'all are. All three of you are employees of Protect AI, but maybe we could just go down the line, starting with Marcello, and you can tell us about your role within the Hunter community, what you do there.
Yeah, I mostly do report triaging with Dan. So whenever you send the bug bounty report to hunter.com, I will be the first people to actually look at your report, triage it. And also I do a lot of backend automation stuff for the platform itself. That's basically my role.
Yeah, I do pretty much the same thing. And then I also do, I mean, we both do some original research in all of our free time at work too.
Yes.
Looking for new bugs and new attacks and things of this nature, because that's what we've done for, I mean, combined 20 years, 30 years
yeah,
now.
Right.
And I focus on the community aspect. So basically I'm in charge of bringing all of us together, getting hunters in the spotlight, celebrating your wins and accomplishments. And yeah.
Awesome. And hunters are like the community members that make up the pool of bug hunters.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Awesome. Right on. Okay. Let's dive in, you guys. So to level set for either first time listeners to this podcast, or maybe listeners who have been here a while, but they're not super familiar with the bug hunting space. Let's do just a brief overview about why the security of AI and machine learning system is a concern in today's technology landscape. Why should we care?
We could start over here.
Yeah.
Oh, you want me to start? Well, I think primarily it's because it's a completely new, it's a very new field, and there hasn't been a security focus on AI and ML, which is normal for most new things that pop up in the tech world. But the main difference between like this sort of wave versus like other previous new technologies, in my opinion, just the pervasiveness, and that tends to have a lot more security implications than usual.
Yeah, it's like the speed of development.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, everyone just latched on. As soon as, you know, ChatGPT came out, it was like...
explosion.
You know, yeah, CEOs are like, well, are we using this to do everything? It's like, well, no, not yet. But, I mean, we can, so let's do it. And then they try and push something out. Or people have little side projects that help themselves at work, and they end up publishing that in open source. Mm-hmm. And now people are like, oh, this is really useful. But it was just a side project. There was no professional security testing of this. There wasn't anybody.
No.
You know, they're just pushing it as fast as they can to get users, because speed of development gets, you know, the early bird gets the worm, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, basically. And it's also just like people and organizations are going to be hooking this stuff up more and more to different kinds of systems. So like there really needs to be a really big focus on the security aspect of it. If you're going to start hooking this up to like, you know, surgery robots or something,
that's also,
it is, which is totally going to happen too. Like there is definitely going to be a use case in like 5-6 years down the line.
Yeah.
Right. Probably going to run a scan or two first.
You know, half these chatbots can already pass medical exams and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of time.
Our exams.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a matter of time when, you know, people are going to start hooking this up to physical stuff.
But it's, I don't want to also sit here and be like, I can't believe all these developers didn't hire penetration testers to test all their software. Like, I get the speed of development is a necessary part of new technologies. It's just a fact of life. Now, should you have, if you slow down and add lots of security to your product before you release it, that's fantastic. But you might get beat to market. You know, you might actually lose money on that. So I'm not here to like proselytize that, oh my gosh, everyone's so stupid for not focusing on security as much as they have. I mean, there's economic reasons that a lot of these have not been thoroughly tested or had security even thought about yet.
Well, also the developers aren't necessarily security experts either.
Right.
So they might not even take that into consideration.
That's something weird I noticed too. And like the AI world, So I started studying AI and machine learning and doing my own machine learning projects a couple years before ChatGPT came out. And what I noticed is like AI engineers tend to have stuck in their lane for a long time. What I mean by that is like a lot of the AI engineers I've met and machine learning engineers, they went to school for machine learning or statistics or something, and they just continued down that path to data scientist, to, you know, junior machine learning engineer, and so on and so forth. But in the general software engineering world, you see a lot of overlap between like system administrators and developers, or penetration testers and network engineers. And I just don't really see that in the AI world. I see a lot of ML engineers that stayed on the ML engineering path and never really went into professional software engineering or anything like that.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is a contributor to some of these issues.
Yeah. And that's something that we've talked about in some other episodes of the show, as you're talking about building, you know, whether it's an ML SecOps dream team or an AI security team within your organizations, how there is this knowledge gap between practitioners or developers in this field specifically and security experts, and kind of how we bridge that and bring those groups together for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So in an organization, then, if we switch tracks a little bit, you know, to your point that there are all these new AI-powered technologies and applications that kind of since that ChatGPT or LLM explosion happened, what, close to a year and a half ago now, individuals within organizations have adopted them. Maybe the organization knows that some of their employees are using this stuff. Maybe they don't. Organization-wide, they've adopted certain tools and are building things on like open source assets, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
We've also talked on the show a lot about the practicality of certain attacks, or whether a vulnerability that's found is actually valuable or it's something that an organization should care about. What do you think are some of the like most common or most impactful vulnerabilities or risks to ML systems that maybe orgs specifically should be concerned about? What's practical?
I think the probably the stuff that would be more, that probably would be concerning you the most, is the stuff that's sort of out of your control in an organization. So like supply chain attacks, like that's the kind of thing that, considering just the state of the ecosystem right now, supply chain attacks specifically, I think, are probably the most main concern, because that's something like your organization can't really control. Like you can have like basic security hygiene practices, like inventory, like you can have egress controls, like you can have all that, but like, and you can sort of like control your environment to a T, but that's just completely something out of your control.
Yeah, I feel like the what gets the most press is, you know, injection attacks and like attacks on the LLMs, because I've talked about a million customer calls. And I think, I mean, probably the majority of the time, the first question is, well, what happens if we introduce an LLM in our environment? Because we're going to try and replace our customer service agents or something. Mm-hmm. I'm like, well, A, you're probably not there yet to have an LLM replace your customer service agents. We'll be soon, but probably not there right now. Those, the attacks of like prompt injection and stuff are novel. And so everyone kind of talks about them a lot. Mm-hmm. But from a practical perspective, you're not going to get your network hacked through your LLM.
Unless you really messed up. Unless you really messed up, I guess.
You're probably going to mess. So what's going to happen is you're going to implement the LLM and you're going to be concerned, oh my gosh, there's all these new attacks and the prompt injection attacks and stuff like that. But realistically, you have to cover that LLM with some kind of API so that other people can reach it. And that API is where you're going to get hit.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, you found a really interesting denial of service in Fast API.
Yes. Yeah. And that's the kind of stuff. But, and again, like, I think there's definitely still some misconception here about, like, especially from a security testing side. And I think this leads into another conversation. But, like, from the security and testing side, like, you really don't need to be a AI or ML engineer to know to actually, like, test security-wise these systems, like, to perform a pen test on these systems. You can just, as long as you know like basic web hacking skills, like you can just continue to, you can just divert your attention to these systems.
Yeah, I kind of consider like the API security is AI security.
Yeah, at this point. An extent. Yeah.
So like ChatGPT, they did a bug bounty program and they actually had like prompt injection and jailbreaks and stuff just out of scope.
No.
So like what are you supposed to attack? You're going to attack the API and like the web, you know, the web components there.
Yeah, your standard like web hacking skills apply here. Like this is not this is not something completely out of the usual for like from a security testing perspective.
So we're talking about organizational risks related to use of AI powered technologies. what are the defenses, or, you know, what types of roles within an organization? Is it pen testers that should get involved, or red teaming exercises? Like, what's kind of the first line of defense, would you say, through your lens, for an organization looking to like bridge the knowledge gap between their security teams and their engineering teams?
We may be biased here, but sure, I think that the pen testers are extremely valuable in an organization that deploys LLMs, and they want to say, oh my gosh, did we open up a new risk in our environment by doing this? Mm-hmm. Well, pen testers are going to be able to figure that out, because you can just give them a network foothold and then say, hey, go do whatever you can from this AI engineering network segment. You know, we'll give you the ML engineer standard laptop. Now go do whatever you can. And you're going to find like that maybe the AI engineers are standing up these web servers that make their life easier. And turns out those web servers haven't been security tested, which we've seen multiple times in the past.
Yes.
And they end up getting, you know, local file includes, they get further network penetration. Now they're in your accounting department. So that sort of thing's useful, but there is also utility in distinguishing that, which is essentially just a regular network pen test or web application pen test, and an actual like model security test. So there's a few different open source tools you can use that actually test the inputs of the models. And they test for things like jailbreaks and prompt injections and things of that nature. And I think that's useful, but I also think that's probably not where you're going to get hacked. You know, if your model is slightly biased in some way, shape, or form, that's what these kind of model attacks and model pen tests is what they're being called now. I just don't really see that as all that practical and impactful to your security. It's useful and it should probably be done. I mean, security testing is always good.
Yeah.
But yeah, like a regular network pen test in your ML engineers network segment is going to be probably way more impactful than you think.
Yeah, I agree. And again, like a lot of this comes down to just like the standard, like basic cyber hygiene. You know, that's the new fang word for it. But, you know, like in inventory, like, you know, like inventory, just like knowing what, when, where, like the software stack that you run, like it's just like some of these are just basic principles.
Yeah. And where it gets confusing in AI is that a lot of these ML engineers, they need to stand up these small open source projects in order to make their lives easier. And then you start to lose control over your own network because they're like, listen, you want me to go fast, right? Yes, you want me to go fast. Okay, I need this installed in a bunch of cloud networks and on our internal network and stuff. And suddenly you just opened yourself up with a, you know, a giant backdoor.
Yeah. Yeah, the zero trust architecture principles really actually help a lot here. The problem is, like, you know, having been on the defensive side of things, like organizations are rarely in a position to even know like what's running on their laptops, let alone like applying like an entire re-architecturing of their network. So it's the same old problems, honestly. It's to an extent, it's like the same problems that we've been having for the last 20 years in terms of like cybersecurity, only that there's a fundamental aspect that here that's a little bit different, which is like these systems are going to be like, they're intended to be publicly exposed to an extent.
Right.
On a wide scale. So they're, might be some additional things down the line that you might have to worry about. But like a lot of these problems come back to like the core tenets of just security.
Yeah, knowledge of what is installed in your environment.
Yeah, exactly.
But it's like, what are you going to do? Like shut down the ML engineers from using their tools? Like, so at that point, that's where the pen test is really useful. You go, okay, listen, you have a week to install everything you need, and then we're going to do security testing on that. Yeah. And then we'll figure it out from there, what you're going to keep and what you're going to lose. Yeah. So that seems like the reasonable path to go down is give them all the speed of development they want, but then check it out, you know, with a security test or a pen test or something.
Got it. Awesome. Okay. So organizational risk that we know exists. There are a couple different pools. It sounds like there is the use of some AI powered technologies or applications that employees might be using has its own set of risks. And then also if you are actually building and deploying AI, you have engineering teams, ML engineers that are creating systems. That's kind of another category. So for the organizations that are building and deploying, many of them are using open source machine learning assets, and these assets can contain vulnerabilities, right? And kind of an enter hunter here. So if we're transitioning over to that group, what it's there for, and how it participates in this ecosystem. Who are the participants within the Hunter community, and how do they contribute to identifying vulnerabilities or bugs in AI ML?
So I can speak to part of that. So I feel like most of our hunters are either bug bounty hunters, hackers themselves, security researchers, pen testers. We've also seen like software developers and engineers come in, hacking enthusiasts, some students that want to learn. As far as how they can contribute to identifying vulnerabilities, I'll pass it over to you two to provide more detail.
In terms of like actually, I think the biggest part about this is the scale. Like if you're able to like get 10,000 people to have eyeballs on a specific project that's open source, like you're guaranteed to like speed up the whole security lifecycle of your product almost immediately. Like it's just the scale that really helps. Like if you never had like any security background whatsoever, Hunter is actually really valuable in terms of finding security vulnerabilities in your open source project. Because
it's not like we're charging for these open source projects.
Exactly.
We add these open source projects because they're open source.
Yeah,
and then we just help the maintainers find the security issues. And I mean, there's no legal reason that they have to like fix the vulnerabilities or anything.
No,
we
there
do
is,
find
yeah.
that pretty much all of them get fixed.
Yeah,
there's been a lot of really good maintainer interest. But as far as like getting started and involved, it's pretty simple. I mean, you just kind of...
Yeah, like what's the journey for like a new community member from sign up through, say, submitting a report or something? What does that kind of look like for someone like me or a business leader who's not at all familiar with that space?
You could just sign up for GitHub and get a GitHub account, log in with your GitHub username to Hunter, and then pick out one of the projects that is in our bounties. I don't know how many there are. There are 100 something.
Yeah, for sure.
Wow.
Pick out one of them, especially ones with like web components. Those tend to be the easier ones to attack.
No.
And then just start running. It's good to do an automated scan first. So something like Sneak is good for code review. So you can download all the code, then do Sneak. But warning, Sneak, 99% of those findings that Sneak finds are just warnings. It's a lot of people report on, cross-site scripting or command injection that doesn't really exist, but Sneak is like, it might exist here. So but it's good for an overview of just like to understand the code, where the vulnerabilities might be. If there's a whole bunch of warnings in one section of code, probably good to check that out. Then you scan it with an automated scanner like Burp Suite. And that'll also give you a kind of good overview of where in the web application there might be vulnerabilities. And then you just got to kind of dive deep. Now, the beauty of this bug bounty program is because all the bounties are in open source, you can just read the code. So you can just go to GitHub and be like, something weird is happening here. I want to know what it is. Okay, great. Go read the code. This is not like a lot of other bug bounties where it's closed source products and something weird's happening, so you just have to black box it. No, this is fully white box and open. And that's where I think it actually is a lot easier to get started in this bounty system than somebody else's.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%. And the fact that you're contributing to like the security of an open source project is also really nice.
Yeah.
It's all, honestly fantastic.
I mean, you're doing something morally right.
Yeah. There you go.
You can feel good about yourself.
And you might even like, and through like maybe because there's a system in Hunter where like you submit the patches to the vulnerabilities you can find potentially as well. So you could wind up being an open source contributor as well. Resume building event, a good one. Mm-hmm.
It's actually quite significant for resumes.
Yeah.
CVEs, because we publish CVEs if the finding is good. And CVEs on your resume look phenomenal if you're trying to get in the security field or even just if you're trying to be in the tech field as a whole. Like, that's really useful. And then they see that you also contributed and patched to it. It's like,
that's really,
hire this person.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially if you're just starting out in security and trying to get like your first gig in cybersecurity.
Yeah. Even
like
software dev.
Yeah. 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 Anything. It's honestly really good.
For a new member to go sign up for the first time, like say I want to get involved, I go to hunter.com. Mm-hmm. Are there certain prerequisite skills that would be helpful for me to have before doing that? Or I guess that's question number one. And then question number two, if you have been bug hunting in the traditional software space for a while, like, is there a big difference? Mm-hmm. What is helpful to bring along if you're going to go join the Hunter community for the first time?
To be perfectly honest, like, there is almost no difference. Like, if you have any sort of background in a bug bounty background or a web application pen testing background, Like those skills apply here. Like again, like 99% of the stuff that's on Hunter is traditional, like network services, web applications.
That's awesome.
So like you really like this, there's no there. And that's part of the, I think that's part of a lot of why, like there's a little bit less interest in this kind of stuff in the security community, at least from what I see. Mm-hmm. It's because I think people have on the assumption that like you need to have some sort of like hardcore ML background in order to get there's not. It's literally just like a web application, and you just all of your standard like hacking skills apply there.
Yeah, and we don't currently have like bug bounties against models themselves. Like there's, we don't have any bug bounties against Claude. You know, Claude 3 Opus came out. So you really don't need to know that much machine learning. I think a little bit of the basics is really useful. So it's useful to know basically like the life cycle. So in 30 seconds, that's you open up a library like TensorFlow. You create a model object inside that library. Then you feed it a bunch of data and then you hit train. Now you have a trained model and you can feed that model new data and it'll make inference is what it's called. It'll make predictions based on that data you just fed it. So say housing prices. Now, because we don't have the bounties on the models themselves, that's basically all you have to know about machine learning.
Yeah.
But the utility of that knowledge is now you understand that machine learning involves a lot of file manipulation. So when you're going through these libraries on our bounty system, looking at the file uploads and the file downloads and tends to be a very hot spot in all of these projects. You can overwrite files. Can you upload malicious files and upload backdoors and stuff like that?
Yeah.
So that's, I would say that's really all the background knowledge you need is just knowledge that there's a lot of file manipulation.
Yeah. And a lot of user input everywhere. Like most of these services are designed to like accept user input almost everywhere.
Because you
need to feed it data for inference, for the model, for any, all the things. It's very
different than regular web apps, because regular web apps don't really do a lot of file upload or file download.
Yeah.
They'll do like, you know, you upload an image and they just store it on an AWS server somewhere safe. Okay. And that's the end of that. But here it's like, you have to upload massive amounts of data to a lot of these web applications in order to feed the model remotely, you know, from Kazakhstan or something. You can upload some data and then have a model be trained and then get the inference. But that is very different than a regular web application, which opens up a lot of holes, which we've seen in the Hunter activity. Last tip, because I just remembered this too.
Dan with the tips.
The Hacktivity page. You said, if you're just getting started, what do you do?
Yeah, you could
pick a project and scan it and whatever. Honestly, the first step I would do is go to the Hacktivity page and see the valid CVEs that have been published. That is like golden, because now you're looking at real world practical attacks. A lot of times new hackers and stuff, they'll go to Wikipedia or OWASP and be like, okay, I'm just going to read about cross-site scripting. And they get overwhelmed with 700 cross-site scripting injection attacks. And it's like, well, but which one of these actually works in the real world? Mm-hmm. Go to the Hacktivity page. You'll see what attacks really work in the real world.
Yeah.
Start with that. Just run through as many as you can until you pass out. Do it again tomorrow. And you'll have a great background knowledge to know where to start looking.
Yep.
Yeah, even reading like the proof of concepts on what they submit, you can learn not only just why it's important, but just like their process, their thought process through like going through this, finding it.
Exactly.
And it like helps you learn, you get a better understanding. So it's like right there on the website, easy to go check out on Hunter.
Yeah.
I think so too, with being a beginner, you know, you can also join other AI ML communities on Reddit, bug bounty, you know, threads on Reddit. There's also people like Nahumsek, which is a well of knowledge. He's a big bug bounty hunter. You can go check out all of his stuff. He's great and amazing. Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of great people out there to follow. Dan as well. He has some good content on the Hunter YouTube channel where he gives tips and tricks. We're constantly going to be pushing out stuff too that's in the works. So yeah, if you're a beginner, I would definitely recommend checking those things out. Or if you just want to completely submerge yourself into it, go to Black Hat, go to, you know, DEF CON, meet other hackers like yourself, meet the team. We'll also be there if anyone wants to stop and say hi. And yeah, just submerge yourself into that environment. I think that's also helpful.
Right.
I think everybody's path is a little bit different, honestly, but open source definitely helped a lot. In terms of like having any sort of like background in open source with this stuff, it definitely helps a lot.
Yeah, it was useful to just encode the knowledge.
Yeah.
So you learn a little bit of Python, you learn a little bit of web application security, and then whatever you learn, just write a script that does it for you. Yeah. That's a good way to get started. In terms of like finding communities and stuff, we have a fantastic Hunter Discord channel.
Yeah,
there's lots of people there that are high value, good at what they do and willing to help.
Yeah,
I imagine you could just go jump into that space. I mean, there are a bunch of different channels and you could say, I'm working on this thing. Yeah, I'm interested in this. Or like, there's this bounty and like, see what folks have to say.
Yeah. Ask questions about help and, you know, does anybody want to work together on this project or something? And
we can
put bounties and stuff like
that.
And we always encourage that too, for them to be collaborative and to hit us up. You know, everyone has access to the Hunter team too on Discord, which is great. So definitely check it out if you haven't yet.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And there was one other resource that I wanted to bring up that I thought I saw that I think exists on the Hunter website, but didn't y'all put together like a beginner's guide to AIML bug hunting?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wrote a big long post on the basics of web application security.
It's pretty much step by step.
Yeah. It's pretty much what we're talking about here. It's, it's the basics of web application security, which is an API security, which is like the basis of AI security. And then the common vulnerabilities that we're seeing on the platform, which you can also see through the activity page. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's stuff like local file include, arbitrary file overwrite, remote code execution, these kind of things in the networked components of these libraries. It gets a lot more difficult if you're looking for, like, buffer overflows in TensorFlow.
Yeah.
That's definitely the next step in advancement, in advanced knowledge. So if you are getting started, I would probably recommend, like, not just running a fuzzer on TensorFlow or something. It's going to take you longer to find a bug than just looking at, like, the HTTP requests in Burp.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Maddie, I wanted to ask you, what would you say are the benefits of joining a community like Hunter in Discord, getting involved with that group when you're embarking on this type of journey?
Well, like I said, you have access to the whole Hunter team on Discord. You have access to other great hackers, you know, the maintainers, everyone is on our Discord community. So you have direct access to them. You can reach out to them. We're also always willing to chat. Something else that's really great is that we're also always willing to put you in the spotlight. So if you found a really great vulnerability or bug and you want to kind of showcase your thought process and how you found it and kind of even just walk through like your proof of concept and all of those things, we'd be more than happy to kind of highlight that and put you on a pedestal and show that to the rest of the community, which I think is great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we always want to kind of bring people to the limelight when it comes to their success. And even when it comes to content collaboration, we're always willing to get, you know, on a call or meeting, what have you, and kind of walk through some great finds that you discovered and how we can bring that to life on the Hunter platform, on the Hunter website. So I feel like that's definitely a plus that we try to communicate to our hunters all the time.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I guess I would wrap with then, this is kind of a common question that we ask all of our esteemed guests at the end of the show, is if you're speaking to the MLSecOps listeners to this podcast, which is a pretty diverse group of threat researchers, people that might already be on Hunter, but also CISOs or security professionals and ML practitioners, engineers, data scientists, through the lens of the Hunter community, what is like one call to action or one piece of info that you would want listeners to take from this episode in particular?
I would say from the community standpoint of Hunter, something that I just want to remind people is that we're all kind of in this same new exciting space, experience this all at the same time. So it might feel daunting to come and feel like you might not know what you're doing, but just know we're all there right there with you. You know, you can talk to us on Discord, Twitter, X, and sign up, reach out to us, you know, leverage the community, leverage other people. And again, I know it feels daunting, but everyone's kind of in the same boat as you.
Yeah. I think one of the big issues is the lack of cross knowledge sharing, right? Between different people with different areas of their speciality or expertise, right?
Yeah.
So if you're like from a ML engineering background, you know, go talk to your security folks, you know, in your organization, you know, try to understand like their concerns and just start those conversations, because that's the only, and if your organization pays for training, you might want to take a couple of secure coding classes.
Absolutely.
That's the kind of stuff that I think is going to accelerate the actually like secure by design principles, both in your organization and both when it comes to these open source projects. So
I feel like from like a CISO perspective, like where Hunter is really, really valuable is the Hacktivity page.
Yeah.
You can just follow along and see, oh gosh, you know, they added a tool that we use.
Mm-hmm.
Is it getting a lot of hits? Is it getting a lot of CVEs or issues? Then, you know, you can have that instant knowledge that there might be an insecure thing on your environment.
Yeah.
Or maybe, you know, a scanner or something finds it.
Awesome. Well, thanks, y'all. And I guess my call to action then for this group, our MLSecOps listeners, might be to listen to another fantastic show that Dan and Marcello are in called Between Two Vulns. There are two, three episodes out right now.
Two right now.
Third and one. More to come.
Yeah.
They're much shorter than this show. Like, it's great for a 10-minute coffee break and you kind of get to dive a little bit deeper into vulnerabilities that the Hunter community has found in a very entertaining and engaging way.
Mm-hmm.
I think that wraps it. Thanks, y'all, for being here today. Thank you to our listeners for joining us. We will have links to all of the Hunter resources that we spoke about and contact details for these lovely folks in our show notes. And until next time, that's a wrap.